G'day everybody, my name's Glenn Hill.
I'm Jacob Meyer.
And welcome to Tactical Tennis Podcast Wimbledon Edition. Maybe not the only Wimbledon Edition, but at least the first one now that the tournament's underway. So we're through two days of play successfully, by and large. Well, I guess, you know, if we're not going to talk too much about the nine withdrawals from or retirements today.
Yeah, although one of them, I will give credit to Feliciano Lopez. I mean, he only pulled out like two games before the end of the match, so... I don't know what was going on with him, but it looked like he wasn't feeling very well. So
yeah,
it's probably
not.
More like eight, but it was a lot.
I'm not sure if he got injured during the course of or what happened, but you know, I guess let's do a quick rundown on any kind of big results from day one. Couple big upsets, most notably Wawrinka.
And the man also didn't quite seem to be himself.
Yeah, dropped in four sets to Medvedev.
Who, to be fair, plays a very aggressive game style, hits the ball clean and fast, and at least matches up in some sense in a way where if Stan's not on top of his game, then it makes sense for him to be able to lose that.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to be clear, I mean, I think this is a bad matchup for Stan, especially early on in the tournament when the grass is, you know, fresher and everything's probably going to play a little faster. And like you said, Medvedev is definitely a very attacking player. Stan likes to have a little bit of time. He likes to stand further back and turn the game vertical with power and depth. And... you know, this is really a matchup that didn't let him do that so much. So obviously shocking he's out in the first round, but then there's an element of it where it's not like astoundingly shocking.
Yeah. As a side note, the courts are bouncing a little bit higher this year. They're a little bit more firm than the groundskeepers like them. Mm-hmm. And the balls seem to be just a little bit, I'm going to say, softer than last year.
Okay.
That's coming from the, I don't know who it is, the grounds crew, basically, that runs all the tests on all this stuff.
Sure, sure. That's good to keep in mind as we talk about some of the matchups coming up. Other surprising results. I was a little shocked to see Tommy Haas go out in the first round in four to Bemelmans, who I've never heard of before.
Really? That's funny. Ruben is a super nice guy. He's a lefty. He plays for Belgium, I want to say.
Yes, he does.
And he's actually... He's actually a really tough matchup for Tommy, because being a lefty, he's got a strong forehand over on that side of the court, and he's got a good solid two-handed backhand. He's a good all-court player. He's been in the top 100 several times in his career. He's a pretty standard Davis Cupper.
Sure, but I mean, Haas obviously, I mean, played well in the grass lead-ups as a whole. I mean, took down Federer.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I would still consider that quite a surprising result. But outside of that, I mean, Karlovic lost in five with four tiebreakers and an 8-6. Nothing, I guess, particularly shocking there. I mean, he's always going to be a bit hit and miss. Nadal looked like an absolute monster.
Nadal was on fire. I mean, if you didn't watch that, a lot of people probably didn't watch that match because they're saying, like, well, Nadal should beat John Millman on grass. John Millman is sort of a backcourt, not really a grinder, but a little bit of a grinder, hardcourt player. But, I mean, Nadal was just lighting it up. I mean, he just hit winners. He was going down the line full power, running down everything, curling balls around. Like, it was like he could do no wrong.
Yeah, he had the ball on a string, without a doubt. That was pretty brutal. I mean, Millman's kind of one of those guys. I mean, he's solid, right? I mean, if you're going to go out there and 1-3-2 him, then you've done something well, obviously.
Oh, no.
That was a old-fashioned street mugging, really, at the end of the day.
It really was. I talked to him, actually, after that match, and Millman has played – he's played all the other guys in the Big Four. I mean, he's played Federer, and he's played Murray, and he's played Novak and stuff. And it was the first time that he had played Rafa – and he came up to me and he just said that was just like, it was another level. Like, it was just different.
Yeah.
And so I went back and was looking at the film. And I mean, Rafa was just going full power, which is not, to be fair, I mean, that's not what he normally does. Like, he is hitting bigger. We talked about this.
A lot more through the court. Yeah.
He's a lot more through the court, a lot more linear. The ball's lower, it's faster, it's got this, just as much spin as it always had. He's just hitting the piss out of it. And we talked about the possibility that he might do more of this with Moya in his camp, and as his career sort of pushes on, that he may feel more pressure, like I have to play more aggressively in order to really have a chance to win these big titles. And boy, oh boy, did he show it in the first round.
Oh, he showed it at the French. And this is one of the things, I mean, I've been, I guess, down on the durability of Nadal's career for a little while now. And, I mean, one of the things I said a little while back when we had that discussion was that if he didn't change the way that he was playing, I think he had a very limited shelf life left as a top-tier player. But, I mean, to his credit, I did not, to be honest, expect that he would actually do it. But he's basically gone out and done all the things that I said I think he needed to do, which was, you know, flatten things out a little bit in terms of the trajectory of the ball, play with more pace, step up in the court a little more, be more aggressive. And he's just done all those things. And obviously, I think he's playing, to me, the best tennis that I've ever seen from him. And that's really, really exciting. I don't want to get too hung up on Nadal, though. Cilic had an impressive straight sets win over Kohlschreiber, who's no slouch.
Yeah, I mean, that's theoretically a really tough one. For some reason, I think a lot of people had the feeling that Cilic was going to roll through that. It's just, you know, if Cilic is stepping into the court and drilling the ball the way that we know he can, he's just going to be tough on the grass, especially with the ball sitting up a little bit this year.
Right, he gets a little more downhill.
Yeah, he's hitting more downhill. I mean, Kohlschreiber is a guy that hits a little bit spinny, kind of hits a kick serve, spins it up in there, and you know, he's definitely not a big guy. He's almost a foot shorter than Cilic. Cilic is huge. I think Kohlschreiber is like 5'10", but Cilic has got to be a full 6'7". So, yeah, I mean, it was just going to be a tough ask. It was really hard to see Cilic in good form go out.
Right. Well, I think that the thing to me really is just the result shows to me that Cilic is in good form, because I think Kohlschreiber is just a very solid all-round player. And the fact that Cilic didn't really run into any problems there is a positive sign for him as the draw continues. Other positive sign for somebody, Nishikori. We talked about him withdrawing in the previous tournament and that he'd done so specifically to try to be well for Wimby. And here he is, 2-2-0 in the first round. You couldn't ask for a better matchup for him as far as a first round draw coming off of a small injury. So that's exactly what the doctor ordered for him.
I mean, and it shows you that he really is conservative when it comes to managing his body. And he's got a long-term view. I mean, he wants to play for a long time. He doesn't want to have injuries sideline him in the big tournaments. I mean, he's trying to peak for Wimbledon and peak for the Slams.
Right.
So.
And Kevin Anderson also, I think, a very positive result. Four-set win over Verdasco.
Heck, I mean, 2 years ago, we would have expected that in a heartbeat. But Verdasco has gotten himself seeded at Wimbledon here. I think he's 31.
Yes.
He's just snuck in, I want to say.
Anderson,
is that right?
Anderson is not at all seeded. Anderson obviously coming back from some injury issues and whatnot. But
Anderson's almost slipped out of the top 100. He really, I mean, his level has really dropped ever since he had the injuries, and he missed almost a year on tour. But that's a good win.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, I mean, that wraps up kind of the day one play, and there's nothing terribly shocking in there. But we mentioned the retirements. And there was a couple of those. Istomin retired against Donald Young. And then in probably the biggest news, Kyrgios retires against Herbert down two sets in his first round match. And that leads us into day two, where the retirements didn't stop or slow down, but rather accelerated. Just to run through the quick list here, we've got Tipsarevic retired, Feliciano Lopez retired, we have Dolgopolov retired against Federer, Lizan retired against Djokovic. Is that's all of them, I think. But still, that's a lot of retirements for the first rounds of Slams.
I think there's a couple more that we're missing, but yeah, I mean, like Lizan, especially the center court schedule today looked like it was great. Lizan and Djokovic is a pretty marquee first round matchup. I mean, Lizan won 2 500s last year. Novak obviously has been going through all of his stuff, so that looked like it was going to be great. But Klizan walked out onto the court with his whole lower leg wrapped in a giant piece of tape. I mean, he obviously wasn't right from the start, but I think he felt like he had to give it a shot. And he was swinging for the fences for a little while and making some balls, but it just wasn't going to happen. So he pulled the plug, and Dolgopolov was much in the same situation. He hurt himself a couple of weeks ago, slipping on a tarp, I think. And it was just too much of an ask. But, you know, you draw a center court Federer at Wimbledon, it's pretty hard to ask a guy not to go out there and and see if he can make it happen. Yeah, you never know what's going to happen with a little bit of adrenaline and stuff. So
yeah, especially on the grass. I mean, you never know. But yeah, I mean, I think it's certainly interesting. I can't remember a tournament recently where we've had this many retirements. I mean, it was to the point where I think Federer made a comment to the in the press interview about, you know, basically asking everybody not to panic about the playing five setters at the slams because of all the retirements. But I think at the end of the day, like, this isn't really a function of it being best of five. More, I think we had a lot of people who came into the tournament with injuries to various degrees that kind of tried to give it their best shot but weren't really up to the task, and that got exposed. And here we are, you know. So yeah, I don't think.
Yeah, and some of those guys would have played a lot longer if it wasn't on center court against Roger or Novak. Like Feliciano Lopez wasn't himself playing against Mannarino, but I mean, he was, you know, down a break in the fourth set before he finally said, you know, I just don't have a chance to win this match. He's got a doubles match tomorrow. It was time to go home for the night.
Sure.
So I think if they had easier draws, then they might have been able to stick around a little bit longer. They might have been able to win a round. I mean, who knows?
Right. Especially, you know, if you took a first round of slam, I mean, that's a $20,000-$30,000 win, you know, if you can find a way to pull that out. So
yeah,
probably worth the effort for, you know, a lot of these guys if they don't expect they're going to worsen their injury by playing through. But looking at the results from today's play, Dimitrov looked reasonably sharp against Schwartzman, tough first set, and then rolls away with it. Isner threw easily. TM looked great. I mean, Pospisil is a dangerous player on the grass. That's a really good win
for Isner, just as a side note. I mean, beating Taylor Fritz, who knows how to play on grass, and Fritz came through qualifying, so he's been sharp on the grass. And John won that in straight sets. I think he only had one tie break, which means he had to break another guy with a huge serve, because Taylor's a big guy with a big serve and plays very aggressively. So
yeah,
maybe keep an eye on Isner here. If he's on form, then obviously he's a dangerous one.
Absolutely. And like I say, Pospisil, very dangerous on the grass, and TM got a straight sets win over him, which I think was impressive.
Yep. Very.
And outside of that, goodness gracious, I mean, nothing else really stood out. I think it's worth mentioning very quickly, Misha Tomic.
Misha looked sharp, and Tomic did not.
Yeah, and then also there's the post-match press conference from Tomic, where he basically said he was bored out there, that it happens quite a lot, and that he wasn't at all motivated.
Well, he said a few things really quickly. You can look up the clip. It's probably worth it. Bernie seems like a really nice guy. It seems like he just wasn't pulling any punches, just saying, look, like, I couldn't get myself into the match. He sort of alluded that he tried to try, if that makes sense. Like, he was trying to get himself up for it, but he couldn't.
Right.
And the thing is, with Misha playing at the level that he's playing at right now, if you're just missing a little bit of motivation with a game like Tomic, I mean, you're not going to win.
That's true. That's definitely true. I mean, you know, I kind of have mixed feelings about this one. I mean, I know I've been fairly, I don't know the right word here. I mean, I've defended Kyrgios and some of his antics over the last year or two, just from the perspective of trying to be cognizant of the fact that we're talking about a very young man who's grown up in a very public eye with a lot of criticism, who's struggling with some personal problems. And look, Tomic, obviously, I mean, if you look at his camp and some of the behavior of his father, I mean, the kids come from a fairly troubled home. That's obvious. He's just starting to me, I think, it's getting to the point where, you know, I'd like to see him kind of take charge of things a little bit more. Obviously for him, maybe he doesn't care, and he kind of alluded to that. Somebody asked him about, is he going to give the money back from Wimbledon?
That was a ridiculous question.
Well, I mean, it wasn't. I mean, there's a point where, like, look, this is professional sports. It's entertainment, you know, and if you show up to a concert and give a half-assed concert and enough people complain, people do give money back for stuff like that. It happens, you know.
Yeah.
If Tomic is going to keep phoning in effort, and, you know, I mean, I don't think it was a ridiculous question. To be honest, I found his response a little more ridiculous. Like, is Federer going to give back $500 million? Like, well, yeah. No, because Federer goes out and gives an effort and wins matches. You know, there's a big difference.
Here's the thing to me, like, Tomic put an effort in. It's not like he didn't put in an effort, okay? And I've been to concerts. I don't know. Maybe I don't know how many concerts you've been to, but I've been to concerts where the artists were drunk. I've been to concerts where the artists were high as a kite. And I mean, they couldn't get the lyrics out straight. And they're not giving money back. Now, there are times when stuff happens and they do give money back. And I get that. And that's fine. And that's probably the way that it should be. But Bernie, to me, was probably at like 75%. It's not like he went out there and just walked from side to side and didn't even try at all. And he wasn't one of these guys that went out like I really like Tipsarevich like a lot. Like I actually like him a lot and I'm a fan and he's a very thoughtful guy. He played 5 games and retired. I don't know what to make of that. You know, Bernie went out, he lost like by a couple of breaks. I mean, he literally had a better result than several guys in the draw that were giving 100% and trying their butts off.
Well, but I don't think that's really the right way to talk about this because I don't. To me, I mean, if Tomáš gives 75%, you know, yeah, he's probably still going to give out a better performance than, you know, I mean, shoot, pick some random guy that people have never heard of who's just not at that right. level. Yeah, I sure. mean, of course not. That's, you know,
That's exactly what the part of the problem is to me because he's a guy who was immensely talented and just better than the competition for years, and 75% was good enough for him to be top 25 in the world.
Right. And I think that you absolutely hit the nail. I think the big problem here is just that Tomáš is doing what Tomáš has always done, but the game is leaving Tomáš behind because he's not doing the work because everybody's getting better. The field is getting deeper. And he's just not doing the work to keep up. So the game's leaving him behind. And I think his lack of willingness or ability to do the work to continue to grow and evolve and change with the game is getting exposed. He's 9-14 this year, and his wins have mostly come at small events, and he's only strung together a couple here and there.
And the quality of his wins hasn't been great. I mean, he's beating guys that he's a lot better than, and he's not beating guys that are as good or better than him. At all.
Right, by and large, yeah.
Which is a trouble.
Anyway, so, don't want to talk about Tomáš all day, but I think the other result that was, or two other results I think worth mentioning very briefly. One is Ferrer over Gasquet in 4 sets. That is a kind of shocking result.
That is an absolute shocker to me. I had Gasquet going through that all the way on grass. And I think if you didn't have Gasquet going through that, that either you have some inside information or you're just looking at it the wrong way because that's an
aberration is what I would call that.
Now, I should say I didn't watch that match, and so I don't know if David's made some change where maybe he's back on the right track, maybe he's switched rackets again or hired a new coach, or, I mean, he can't get any fitter, so, you know.
Well, he could stop smoking. I mean, there'd be that, but yeah. So that last one is Del Potro with a solid win over Kokkinakis, who's back. Obviously been back for a couple of tournaments now, but still good to see him in the draw. Kind of a tough first rounder for him.
Are you kidding me? That's a tough first rounder for both of those guys. Either one of those guys could have won 2, 3, 4 matches. I mean,
absolutely.
Super tough first round.
We'll see if Del Potro can moving forward. But I guess if we take a moment and look forward at the draw now, make a couple predictions.
Yeah, I want to know, first of all, I mean, Del Potro obviously got through Kokkinakis in the first round. Big server, big forehand, really good, big from the ground all around. How far do you have Del Potro going?
Well, so that's a good question. And look, to me, the big problem is just draw, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I really like Del Potro. I think he's got a game that stands up very well on the grass. Here's the deal. So he's got Gulbis next, which I expect him to get through fairly handily, although I will say Gulbis absolutely pasted Estrella Burgos, who I've never heard of before.
Estrella Burgos is an altitude, he's become an altitude specialist. That was going to be a pasting.
Yeah.
There's no way around that one.
Well, it's Gulbis, so you never quite know. But anyways, you know, so I expect Del Potro to take care of Gulbis in 3, maybe 4, because Gulbis can smack the ball pretty hard when he wants to. And then his next match is Djokovic, who I do expect to get past Pavlisak without any difficulties. And I'll tell you, like, that's a match that really could go either way. I would expect 4 sets no matter what from that. And I wouldn't – I mean, to me, that's a coin toss. I don't say matches are coin tosses very often, but I really think that's a match that could go either way.
So this is a tough one to me. I've got Del Potro squeaking through that one. But I will say that there's a good chance that I'm going to be wrong. I saw I saw Novak practicing. He's got his new guys here with Agassi and Ancic. They seem to be kind of all getting to know each other. But it seems like they've got a nice energy, and Novak seems to really enjoy that. And so, you know, if he lights it up, obviously, then he's pretty lights out on the grass. But Delpo looks really, really sharp. He's hitting the ball just enormous.
As he pretty much always has. But part two is, I mean, Djokovic didn't get tested in his first round. I mean, Kljan came out injured, retired after a set in two games. And then we don't expect Pavlicek to... The one thing to me is, I don't know whether this is going to hurt or help Djokovic, that he doesn't really have to play well these first two matches.
I think it's going to hurt him. I think it's going to hurt him bad. And I think Delpo's tested, and it's early. He's tested, but he's not tired.
I'm of the opposite. For Djokovic, I feel the opposite, where I feel like now the emotional and physical space Djokovic is in when he, and I've talked about this before, and I think it's held true over the last month or so, is when he has to play back-to-back matches, when he has to get back-to-back big wins, he has a lot of problems doing that. And the fact that he's got easy first two rounds, comparatively speaking, he's going to come into the match with Del Potro fresh and able to bring it. So that's why I think this is a coin toss. I think the match after that could get very interesting because, I mean, the next little section, we've got Monfils, Edmond, and then Sugita and Manarino, which I expect Monfils to come through that fairly comfortably. I wouldn't expect you to disagree on that one, but maybe I'm wrong.
I actually didn't look that closely at that part of the draw, but I would not count out Sir Kyle. He is going to feed off the crowd. I mean, the crowd's going to be so far behind him. Kyle Edmund's a nice guy, good-looking, sort of young Brit, and he's big from the ground. Like, he can play. He can straight-up play. He gets to practice with Andy a lot. He's not going to be intimidated by Gale.
Gale will feed off the crowd, too. I mean, this is a guy who lives for those gladiator battles. I mean, he loves when the crowd's engaged.
I'm going to go ahead and say that's going to be a five-set match.
Okay. We'll see. But I think Monfils will come through that section. So that'll put Monfils against the winner of Delpo Djokovic. I think that's when we might potentially start to see Djokovic run into problems if he gets through.
Monfils never beat Djokovic. He just lost him in the final last week. So the thing is,
we'll see.
If Novak can get through Delpo, then, I mean, I've got him going to the semis.
Yeah. Interesting.
But where I have is, I think that Delpo is going to surprise. I think he's going to be the upset.
There was that if there. Yeah, our next little section, Berdych is, I mean, we've got Ferrer, who apparently is playing well now. but yeah. Berdych should be comfortable to get through that. And then, of course, Thiem. That's a weird little part of the draw. It's really kind of interesting to me the way the draw's broken out. There's these sections that are really, really quite strong, and then sections that are kind of absurdly weak.
It's been very lopsided this year.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like Federer's got, you know, Lajovic. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce that one.
I don't know how to pronounce it.
And then he's playing the winner of Misha Zverev and Kukushkin. So that's, I think he should be good for all that. I mean, I think he's good for the whole tournament, frankly.
was that just a sneaky prediction right there?
I don't think it's very sneaky. I mean, to me, right now, he's my favorite to win the whole thing. I'm just going to say this. I think he'll be playing Nadal in the final, and I think that could get very, very interesting in a very big hurry.
First of all, I think the whole sporting world is just praying for an Nadal Federer final, and absolutely Wimbledon is, as well as whoever has their TV contracts. But if you hearken back to, oh man, it would have been pre-French Open. I was talking about this. If Rafa goes into the French Open,
I remember,
and does his thing in Paris and goes into the grass feeling confident and playing aggressive, I called it then and I'm sticking to it, that he's going to walk away with the Wimbledon title, and we've got a race for the GOAT.
We'll see. We'll see in a couple of weeks. But then, this next section also, I think, is quite stacked. You've got Dimitrov, Baghdatis, who took down Ward in straights, then Sella and Isner.
Yeah, not bad. And Sella's a really, really good grass court player, but he's probably going to be overmatched there.
Yeah, I think Grigor's going to come out of that portion, personally. I think he'll take Bagdatis, and then Isner. Yeah, I think Grigor's just got the goods to take care of that.
And what about the next one?
Next one is Sock Offner, TFO, and Sasha Zverev. So, yeah, I think Zverev's getting through that. Although Sock, I think, could really actually be genuinely dangerous. He brings
Sock
enough.
Sock had actually a really good win today over a young Chilean, which isn't going to sound like much for a grass court guy, but it was a good win. The guy's got a big game. He trains with Rafa all the time. He's one of Rafa's academy kids, or he's like the best young player that they have at the Rafael Nadal Academy. So.
Yeah. So I think that Sock Zverev, that could be a very, very interesting match. Sock's got enough firepower, and I think that he plays with a certain innate intelligence that he could give Zverev a lot of trouble. Like, I could see Zverev getting very rattled in that match, getting very frustrated from Sock just smacking serves and forehands. So, Zverev doesn't like not having control. He doesn't like when people kind of take him out of the game a little bit. Because, he tends to have fairly big weapons himself, and Sock, I think, has the ability to actually do that. So that's one I think we should keep a close eye on. I mean, I see Sock at least getting a set, if not more, there.
Yeah, it could be a long match for sure. If it goes long, though, I think Zverev's got the advantage.
Probably. And then we've got Raonic, Yuzhny, and Rublev, and Ramos Vinolas.
So surely Raonic is going to sneak through there, right?
Yeah, you'd expect that. I will say this, though. Yuzhny got a straight set win over Mahut today. And Nicholas Mahut is a good grass court player. Always has been.
He is, but Yuzhny loves the serve and volley guys that don't have absolute... I mean, Mahut hits a lot of aces, but he doesn't have a cannon the way that Raonic does.
Sure.
And he's, he's gotten so good at doubles, it's actually taken some time away from his singles, despite the fact that his singles ranking has been... recently at career highs. I don't think that he's peaking for the slams the way that he used to. He used to be a guy that was kind of around 100, but he'd really raise his level in the slams. He had a lot of energy in the tank, and I mean, he's winning every week in doubles. So
yeah, I mean, he's 4 in the world in doubles, but only 78 in singles now. So yeah, I think we see the effects of that. But I would expect Raonic to get through. I mean, I think if he gets through Yuzhny, then he's through this whole section into the fourth round, but there's still some tennis to be played there. Let's just go ahead and look at quarterfinals real quick. I guess the only other match I really want to talk about briefly.
I know there's at least one more in there in the top of the draw.
There's one match I think we do need to talk about, and that's Andy Murray, Dustin Brown.
And can I just tell everyone that you've got Andy Murray going down to Dustin Brown tomorrow?
No, you said that first. Thank you very much. I said I think that's going to be a very interesting match.
Okay,
and
fine.
You said that you've got Brown winning it.
I think that Brown beat Rafa on center court a couple of years ago, and it was not an accident. And this is probably the only important part of this podcast that you have to listen to. So pay attention. It was not an accident. It was because of the tactics and the strategy that he used. And he has a plan, and he knows what he's going to do. And it's just going to come down to how much he can actually execute it. But if he goes out there and sticks to his plan, then he's probably going to beat Murray, which would be a shocker. I mean, it would be a very big deal.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I think Murray's going to get through in four. I think Brown's good for a set. But I think Murray will take that match at the end of the day.
I feel like without us realizing it, you're just being biased right now. I think that deep down inside you agree with me and that you see this as well, but we just have to disagree.
Well, maybe, I don't know. Maybe I'm just being contrarian, for the sake of entertainment, but I know Murray doesn't like being attacked a lot. I mean, he had the loss to Zverev, earlier in the year, that was a big one. Misha, not Sasha, for those listening. So, obviously he doesn't like the serve volley. He doesn't like people coming at him a lot. He's very much that counterpuncher, but he's not the counterpuncher in the way like Andre used to be, where, I don't know if I can really call Andre a counterpuncher as much as just a freaking ball destroyer. But yeah, I just, there's that part where I don't think Murray really likes to pass that much. Or if he does, he likes to pass like towards the end of a long rally.
He likes to pass on the backhand. He doesn't like to pass off of 90-mile-an-hour flat lasers that are coming into his forehand corner, which is probably the only thing that Dustin Brown's going to do.
Right, but the thing is, too, the thing to me is it's all about when he hits passing shots. I mean, Murray is a very intelligent guy, and he's a very intelligent player. He likes to massage points, and I don't think he's got an issue hitting good passes and good lobs, especially also as a result of a long rally that ends up with somebody coming into the net, and he's kind of in that rhythm, and he's got the read, and he's just there, and he makes the shot. When somebody just comes at him and makes it, you know, like wham-bam tennis, where it's short, 1-2 punches, and everything's rushed and frantic, he doesn't like that at all. And I think we're going to see him get a little bit unsettled against Dustin. But I do think he's going to come through it. I don't really know why. I just have a feeling that he's going to hold it together well enough to squeeze through that match. I think he's obviously been suffering a bit of a hangover from getting number one and all the work that he did to get there, but I think he's about due to start coming out of that. And I think he's going to have a good tournament overall.
He's had a bit of a hip thing that's been bothering him. I mean, the local press was all about whether or not, you know, his hip would be good enough to play. They were making it out, of course, to be worse than it is.
Sure.
But, I mean, he looked fine. He looked fine early on. The thing that I think would tip the scales in Murray's favor, if he does win, it'll be because his service return is better suited to beating Dustin Brown than Rafa's was. Rafa was standing really far back, which didn't work. Murray's backhand return is hands down better. I mean, to me, he's got the best backhand return out there.
Yeah, but fabulous.
But, I mean, his return's really, really good. And so if he's going to get through that match, it's really going to be the strength of his return that is going to interrupt the tactics that Dustin's trying to use. And if that's the case, then it's just going to be too good. But I think Dustin's going to go out there and go for it. And, you know, he's one of these guys that lives for the moment and loves the big stage. And, I mean, everybody on tour knows how dangerous he is.
Absolutely. So, and this is interesting because that quarter, let's just say hypothetically Murray does lose, that quarter of the draw opens up like phenomenally wide at that point. Because, right? I mean, here's the list of names that you have going down, you know, Vasselli, Fognini, Herbert, however the heck you say that one, Per, Janowitz, Pui, Songa, Bolelli, Basilashvili. I got it that time. Messed it up last podcast, nailed it that time. Query, Anderson, Seppi, Bemelmans, and Medvedev. I mean, that's not exactly the who's who of tennis. Obviously, Anderson's capable of playing some dangerous tennis. Songa obviously can play some great grass court tennis.
Yeah, I mean, you got to expect Songa to get through that, or Query?
Or Query, because that's also a tough little section.
Query would be so pumped if Andy loses in that section.
Oh, yeah, but actually, I mean, I think it's really, that'll really open things up in a huge way. That I don't think maybe necessarily is true for the other. So, you know, like if Nadal goes down, I mean, you feel like Cilic looks good for that part. And if not him, then Nishikori, you know. Like most of the other sections, it feels like there's a very clear next person. But, you know, Medvedev's big upset over Wawrinka today really opens that part of the draw up. But so if we look at the quarterfinals, let's look ahead. I mean, well, let me ask you this. You obviously don't think Murray's making the quarters, and Wawrinka can't. You think Nadal's going to, as do I, very comfortably.
Yep.
I mean, I think I have Nadal going to the finals. I think Cilic will play Nadal in that quarter. I think he's going to get through.
Agreed.
And then if we look at the other half of the draw, I don't know about Raonic. I'm not sure that I feel he's gonna make it. You know? That's a tough one. I mean, his section's fairly friendly, but I think that at the end of the day, Sasha's going to be the one from that part of the draw to get through.
Yeah, I mean, I have Sasha there.
I think.
And Fed.
Yeah, and I think we're going to see Fed playing Dimitrov, and I think Fed's going to come through that one. Mm-hmm. And then the last part, I mean, Djokovic, you think Del Potro is going to take him?
Yep, I've got Delpo Berdych down there.
Delpo Berdych. Okay, so you think Berdych's going to come through over team?
Yeah.
Okay. I can dig that. I think Berdych's actually playing quite well. I do think Djokovic is going to make it through his portion. I'm not convinced he's going to make it past the quarters, but I think he'll get there. I think quarters where we're going to start to see him run into some problems. But I think it should make for some very entertaining quarterfinal tennis when the time comes.
To me, the biggest shock would be if Novak makes it to the quarters and loses in the quarters. Then his mind would have to be all sorts of discombobulated. And that's just not something that we see from him. Like, I hate to reference it again, but, you know, from Tomic or guys like him that we've seen in the past, I mean, they just do what they do. They've been that way. And they're nice guys, and, you know, they have a lot of internal struggles as far as getting absolute 100% out of themselves. But Novak's not that guy. So
right.
To me, if he's going to get through, then he's going at least to the semis. And, you know, if he's going to lose, it's going to be to, I mean, it's going to be to Roger in my mind.
Sure. But, fair enough. So I just do want to add a quick disclaimer here, folks. If you are listening and you happen to bet on the Wimbledon draw based off what we're telling you and you lose money, no angry emails. I mean, shoot, you can send an angry email, but not too angry, okay? Let's moderate that.
Oh, come on. You should see. Who is it? I'm trying to think of who's good to follow on Twitter. Some of the guys will post the messages that they get, like, on their Facebook accounts from all the bettors and stuff, like, Sam Groth made a comment about it recently about, like, just the, like, ridiculous amounts of hate mail that he gets if he loses a match that he's supposed to win.
Right.
But no, I mean, we all know what it's about. We're just trying to understand these guys and have a good time and enjoy watching them. But hey, that's it. I mean, those are our predictions. So
yeah, at least through the quarters, we'll probably pick up another one in a few days. And as the draw continues to develop. But in the meanwhile, if you do have any matches that you want to hear thoughts on or predictions or comments, do share them. You can reach me at Glenn with one N, GLEN, at tacticaltennis.com.
I'm Jacob at tacticaltennis.com. And just for the record, I am over here in London, if you haven't picked up on that. So if you have any specific things you'd like us to look into while we're over here, then do shoot an email over and let us know what to look for.
Absolutely. Meanwhile, swing by the website, tacticaltennis.com. Subscribe to the email if you haven't already, because we are going to be giving some stuff away in the near future. And that would be nice if you like free stuff. Just make sure if you do subscribe that you check your spam mail for the confirmation, because sometimes it goes there and we'd hate for you to miss out on freebies. And when I say free stuff, I'm not talking about like a sweatband or two. I'm talking like rackets, nice things. Things that are worth your while.
We're not giving away sweatbands.
No, we're not giving away sweatbands. Yeah, no, like real stuff, and more details on that as it gets closer. But outside of that, folks, hope to hear from you and have a great day.
Later.